This is disc number 17.
By the guard's self-satisfied smile, he looked unimpressed with Kalin. After all, he had already, by himself, nearly brought her to task, and to his tent. In his mind, he had been only a few steps away from having her under him. "You," she said, pointing right between his eyes. "You I will kill first." The men all snickered. She swept an appraising gaze over them and their weapons, learning what there was to learn. She pointed at the man with a broken nose. "You die second, after him." "What about us three?" one of the others asked, unable to suppress a chuckle. "What order will you kill us in?" Kalin shrugged. "You will know just before I cut your throat." The men all laughed. Chigang didn't. "You would be well advised to take her seriously," the Emperor told them. "The last time she got her hands on a knife, she killed my two most trusted bodyguards. Men a lot better at soldiering than you. And a sister of the dark. All by herself. And all in a matter of a few brief moments." The laughter died away. "You all will stay on your toes," Jigang said in a low growl. "Or I will gut you myself if I even think you are being inattentive to your duty. If she gets away under your watch, I will send you to the torture tents and command that your death take a month and a day, that your flesh rots and dies before you do." There was no longer any doubt in the men's minds as to the seriousness of Jigang's orders, or the value of his prize. A vast escort of hundreds, if not thousands, of the inner and most expert of the Emperor's guards formed up around their leader as he strode purposefully away from his tent. The five special guards surrounded Kalin on every side, except the side Jigang was on. They all moved out into the camp in a wedge of armor and drawn weapons. Kalin supposed that, as a leader, Jigang was just taking normal precautions against spies. But she thought it was more than that. He was better than everyone else. Chapter 46. By the time they returned to the Emperor's compound and his large tent after the Jala contests, Kalin's level of worry had risen. It wasn't just the obvious dread of being alone with such an unpredictable and dangerous man, or even her near panic over what she knew he intended to do to her. It was all of that, along with an awareness of a sinister undercurrent to his cruelty churning just beneath the surface. There was a flush to his face, a more assertive nature to his movements, an edgy quality to his short comments, a fierce intensity in his inky eyes. Watching the games had put Jigang in an even more violent mood than what she believed was his norm. The games had worked him up. They had excited him. In every way. Back at the games, he'd felt that one of the teams had not played to their full potential, had not given it everything they had. He'd thought they were holding back and not putting their all into the contest. When they lost, he had them executed on the field. The crowd had cheered more at that than the rather tedious play of the game itself. Jigang was hailed for putting the losers to death. The games that followed were played with considerably more passion, and on grounds soggy from the blood of the beheadings. Jala was a game in which men ran, dodged, and darted past one another, or blocked, or chased the man with a heavy ball, the Brock, trying to capture it, or attack with it, or score with it. Men often fell or were knocked from their feet. When they were, they rolled across the ground. In the summer heat, without shirts, they were soon slick, not just with sweat, but with blood. From what Kalin could see of the female camp followers watching from the sidelines, they weren't in the least put off by the blood. If anything, it made them only more eager to catch the attention of the players who were now whipping the crowd into a frenzy with their fast-paced, aggressive tactics. In all the rest of the games after the one resulting in executions, as in the previous ones, the losing teams, since they had at least played with wild determination, were not put to death, but flogged. A terrible whip, made up of a number of knotted cords bound together, was used for the penalty. Each of those cords was tipped with heavy nuggets of metal. The men were given one lash for each point by which they lost. Most losing teams lost by several points, but even one lash from that whip ripped open the naked flesh of a man's back. The crowd enthusiastically counted out each lash to each man on the losing team kneeling in the center of the field. The winners often cavorted around the perimeter of the field, showing off for the crowd, while the losers, with bowed heads, received their whipping. It had made Kalin sick to witness such a thing. It had excited Jagang. Kalin was relieved that the games were at last over, but back inside the Emperor's compound and about to enter his tent, her gnawing sense of dread was eating away at her insides. Jagang was in a temper provoked by violence and aroused by blood. Kalin could see in his eyes that he was in no mood to be denied anything. And the only thing left for him that night was her. As the special guards were just about to be posted outside the tent, she spotted a man running into the compound, followed by a small group of men. Jagang paused in his instructions to Kalin's special guards as the rings of defenders parted to let the man and a gaggle of officers through. When the man came to a breathless halt, he announced himself as a messenger. "What is it, then?" Jagang asked the messenger, scrutinizing the half-dozen men of rank with him. Jagang was not at all pleased to be bothered when he had his mind set on other things. Kalin knew that she was the focus of his brooding thoughts, and that he wanted to get her inside and alone. The time had come, and he was impatient to get at her. He had so far not touched her in any improper manner. He was saving it all up. In much the same way that any city in the path of his army had to wait in agonizing dread for the impending assault, she, too, felt the stranglehold of overpowering fear as she waited for what she knew was coming. She tried not to imagine what he was going to do to her and what it would be like, but she could think of nothing else, any more than she could slow her galloping heart. The messenger handed over a leather tube. It made a hollow thunk when Jagang popped the lid off. With two fingers, he extracted a rolled piece of paper. He broke the wax seal, unrolled it, and held it up to read it in the light of the torches flanking the entrance to his tent. The rings he wore on each finger sparkled in the flickering torchlight. At first frowning, the Emperor began to smile as he read. He finally laughed aloud as he looked up at his officers. "The army of the Taharan Empire has fled the field of battle. The reconnaissance from scouts and sisters alike have all reported the same thing, that the Taharans were so terrified of the prospect of facing Jagang the Just and the Army of the Order that they all deserted and have scattered in every direction, proving what faithless cowards they really are. The forces of the Taharan Empire are no more. There is nothing standing between us and the People's Palace." The officers cheered their emperor. Everyone was suddenly in a jovial mood. Jagang bestowed his congratulations on the officers for being a part of putting the enemy on the run. As she listened, standing off to the side while the others all watched Jagang waving the paper and speaking of the end of the long war being at hand, Kalin slowly, carefully, lifted a leg until her fingers found the hilt of the knife tucked into her right boot. Making as little movement as possible so as not to draw the attention of the five men who could see her, or Jagang himself, she worked the weapon up out of the boot and into her fist. As soon as it was securely in hand, she retrieved the second knife from the other boot. She tightly grasped the leather-wrapped handle of each well-made weapon, working her fingers to get a secure grip on the hilts. Having weapons in hand filled her with a sense of purpose, banishing her helpless dread at what was in store for her that night. She now had a way to strike at them. She knew that she might not be able to stop Jagang from what he would do to her, but it would not be without a fight. This was her chance to extract a price. She didn't move her head, only her eyes, as she took stock of where each man was standing. Jagang, unfortunately, was not close to her. He had stepped to the messenger, and then closer to his officers. Kalin knew that he was far from stupid. If she were to walk up to his side, he would instantly be suspicious. He would know that she would not do such a thing willingly. She also knew that he was an experienced fighter. He would react before she could lunge at him. Having him closer probably wouldn't have done her much good anyway. There were better targets, a better chance for surprise. The five special guards were close to her left, the officers a little farther away to her right. The officers couldn't see her. Beyond was a camp of men who couldn't see her. But even though the officers couldn't see her, the five could, and as soon as she moved, she would have only an instant before they reacted. She knew that she could draw a lot of blood, but there was little chance she would escape. The alternative was to submit meekly to her impending rape. Kaelin summoned her rage. She gripped the hilts of the knives tighter. This was a chance to strike back against her captors. With a straight-in, direct, and mighty thrust, she slammed the long knife in her left hand into the center of the chest of the special guard she had promised to kill first. Some dim part of her mind noted his stiff surprise. Just beyond him, the eyes of the man with the broken nose went wide as he, too, stiffened with shocked surprise. Kaelin used the knife planted in the chest of the first man as an anchor, for leverage. With that grip to help her, she spun around the man already stabbed. At the same time, she brought the knife in her right hand around with her in an arc. The blade slashed open the throat of the man with the broken nose. In two beats of her hammering heart, she had killed them both. Kaelin drove her left boot into the first man as he fell, in order to pull free the embedded knife and to spring herself in the opposite direction, toward the officers. On the third beat of her heart, she hit the first officer like a jala tackle. As she flew into him, she plunged the knife in her right hand deep into his belly, jerking up as she did so to rip him open. At the same time, she stabbed the other knife square into the throat of the man immediately to the side and a little behind the first officer. He had been the ranking officer, and the one she was really targeting. She hit him with such force that the blade not only drove through the man's throat, but hitting the space between the vertebrae, it pierced all the way through his neck. His spinal cord cut, his entire dead weight dropped straight down so fast that Kaelin's grip on the knife twisted her off balance and pulled her with him. At the same time, before she could catch herself or yank the knife back, the power from the collar hit Kaelin like a lightning bolt. At the same time, the other three special guards tackled her, taking her the rest of the way off her feet and ramming her face first into the soft ground. With the collar making her arms numb and useless, and her legs unable to respond to her wishes, the men had no trouble disarming her. When Jagang shrieked the order, they hauled her to her feet. Kaelin panted from the effort of the brief battle. Her heart still raced. Even if she had failed to escape, she wasn't entirely disappointed. She hadn't really thought that her chances of making it were that good to begin with. She had expected, though, to at least kill a couple of officers, and she had accomplished that. She was disappointed only that the special guards had not killed her, rather than capture her. Jagang dismissed the confused officers, explaining that it was a bit of magic that had gotten loose. He assured them that he had everything well in hand. They were men used to violence and seemed to take the sudden death of two fellow officers by an invisible hand, if not in stride, at least with a level of self-control, reassured by the demeanor of their emperor. As they made their way out of the emperor's compound, they collected a number of men who rushed in to remove the bodies. The guards who came to see what the commotion was all about were dismayed to see such a murder within their layers of defenses. They all glanced to Jagang to gauge his mood and, when seeing him calm, swiftly went about the business of carrying off the four dead men. Once they had departed, Jagang finally turned a glare on Kaelin. "I see that you were closely watching the games. You appear to have been paying more attention to the strategy than the bare flesh of muscular men." Kaelin met the gazes of the three special guards holding her. "Just keeping a promise." Jagang slowly let out a deep breath, as if trying to keep from murder himself. "You are quite a remarkable woman. A formidable opponent." "I'm the bringer of death," she told him. He glanced at the four bodies being carried out into the night. "So you are." He turned his intense attention to the three men holding Kaelin. "Is there a reason that I should not send you three off to be tortured?" The men, who had been smug about having taken her down, suddenly didn't seem so smug. They glanced nervously at one another. "But Excellency," one of them said, "the two men who failed you paid with their lives. The three of us stopped her. We didn't let her escape." "I am the one who stopped her," he said through barely restrained rage. "I stopped her with a collar she wears around her neck." He considered them silently for a moment, letting his flash of rage calm down a little. "But I am called Jagang the Just for good reason. I will allow you three to live for the time being, but let this be a lesson to you. I warned you that she was dangerous. Now perhaps you can see that I know what I'm talking about." "Yes, Excellency," the three said over one another. Jagang clasped his hands behind his back. "Release her." He passed a withering glare over each man before taking Kaelin's arm and leading her back toward the opening of the tent. She was still reeling from the shock of the collar. Her joints ached. Her legs and arms burned from inside. She had wondered if Jagang had been telling the truth, that he could use the collar without the sisters needing to be present. Now she knew. Without that collar, she might have stood a good chance of breaking free. With it, she didn't. She dared not take Jagang's ability lightly from now on. At least now she knew. Sometimes it was worse to wonder if something would have been possible. "I want you three to guard outside my tent tonight. If she comes out without me, you had better stop her." The three soldiers bowed. "Yes, Excellency." They no longer looked at all smug. They looked like what they were, men who had just escaped a death sentence. As the men took up their posts, Jagang turned a grim look on Kaelin. "The last time you only went for a walk among the men. It was a short walk. You saw only a small sampling of my army. Tomorrow you are going to have a much better chance to see a great many more of my men. And a lot more of those men are bound to see you. I don't know what the anomaly is that Ulysses spoke of, or its cause, but it doesn't really matter to me. What matters is that, like in all things, I intend to use it to my advantage. I intend to see to it that you are well guarded. You will ride again tomorrow, and we will take a tour through the troops. But you are going to do it without your clothes. In that way, you will help us find a goodly supply of new special guards. It should be quite an exciting day." Kaelin didn't offer an argument. None would have done any good. She could tell by the careful way in which he explained it that he meant for it to make her uncomfortable. She suspected that her humiliation was only just beginning. Emperor Jagang ushered her in through the opening of his tent as if she were royalty. He was mocking her, she knew. As she moved inside, she could feel the power of the collar release its grip on her. She could at last move her feet and arms on her own. The pain, thankfully, began to fade as well. Inside the tent it was nearly dark, lit only by candles. They gave the tent a warm glow, making it feel cozy and safe, almost like a sacred place. It was anything but. She felt as if she were being led to her execution. Chapter 47. The slaves who had prepared a late-night sampling of light foods for the Emperor were all dismissed. At seeing the look in his eyes, and after having heard the screams of dying men, everyone was only too happy to leave when he growled at them to get out. He watched as they all rushed out, and then, with a thick finger pressed into the center of her back, Jagang silently steered Kaelin past the table with mugs of wine, platters of meats, loaves of dark bread, bowls of nuts, and arrangements of fruits and sweets, escorting her beyond another tapestry, hanging before an opening into an inner bedroom within the tent. The bedroom was isolated from the rest of the tent and from the outside by what looked to be padded panels, probably to make it quieter. The walls were also covered with hides and fabric hangings of material woven into muted patterns. The room was warmly decorated with exquisite carpets, a few small pieces of fine furniture, glass-fronted bookcases filled with books, and ornate silver and gold lamps. The bed, covered in furs and satin, had spiraled dark wooden posts at each corner. Kaelin hid her trembling fingers behind her back as she watched Jagang cross the room and remove his lamb's wool vest. He tossed it over a chair at a small writing desk. His naked chest and back were covered in dark, curly hair. He looked like a bear of a man in more ways than one. He looked like anything but a man who would have satin bed coverings. She suspected that he didn't really appreciate such things, but wanted them as a mark of his station. She guessed that he must have forgotten that no one was supposed to be better than anyone else in the Order. She guessed that he never considered whether or not the men out in the grimy tents had satin blankets to sleep under. Jagang looked up at her. "Well, woman, take off your clothes. Or would you rather I tear them off you? Your choice. Whether I take them off or you rip them off, it is still rape." He straightened and peered at her for a time in the silence within the tent. The camp outside had quieted down considerably, leaving only the muted sounds of distant words to melt together into a dull hum. The men were tired from the day's long march, as well as the excitement of the Jala games, and Jagang had decreed that each day's march would be equally swift until they reached the people's palace, so most of the men were no doubt in their tents sleeping. The only one not quieted down for the night was Jagang. If he was in an excited state after the games, then after her killing the four men, he was on the edge of a rampage. Kaelin didn't really care. If he beat her senseless, then she wouldn't have to be conscious for what else he was going to do to her. "You are mine now," he said in a low, dangerous tone. "You belong to me, to no one else, to me alone. I can do whatever I wish with you. If I choose to cut your throat, then it is your duty to bleed to death for me. If I give you to those three men who can see you, then you will submit to them whether you like it or not, whether you do so willingly or not. You belong to me now. Your fate is what I choose for you. You have no choice in what happens to you. None. Everything that happens to you is by my choice alone." "It's still rape." He crossed the room in three angry strides and backhanded her, knocking her sprawling. He pulled her up by the hair and heaved her at the bed. The world spun as Kaelin tumbled through the air. She only missed the wooden posts by inches. "Of course it's rape! That's what I want it to be! That's what you have coming!" He charged to the bed like an enraged bull. His black eyes were filled with wild storms of shapes. Before she knew it, he was above her. Kaelin had it all planned out. She wasn't going to try to stop him, to give him the satisfaction of having to use force to have her. But with him right there, on top of her, straddling her hips, those thoughts were lost in the sudden panic of events that she desperately didn't want to happen. She forgot all her plans and desperately tried to push his hands away. But in such a mood, there was no stopping him. She had no strength to begin to match him. He didn't even bother to slap her to make her stop resisting. With one yank, he ripped her shirt open. Kaelin went still as he stopped, her chest heaving from the effort. He stared down at her breasts. She used the sudden quiet to school herself. She had just killed four brutes. She could do this. This was nothing compared to having a collar around her neck, to having her memory stripped away from her, to losing her identity, to losing who she was, to becoming the helpless slave to Sisters of the Dark and an emperor of a mob of thugs. This was nothing. She was better than to fight him in such a foolish manner, like a schoolgirl trying to slap away the hands of a bully. She didn't fight like that. She wouldn't. She knew better. Yes, she was terrified, but she didn't have to surrender to panic. She was afraid when she'd killed those four men, but she had controlled her fear and acted. She was better than he was. He was only stronger. He could only have her by force. That knowledge gave her a thread of power over him, and he knew it. He could never have her willingly, because she was better than he was, and she deserved better by far. He could never have a woman like her except by force, because he was weak and worthless as a man. "Is your prize of prizes satisfactory, Excellency?" she mocked. Oh, yes. Jagang's wicked smile widened. Now take off those traveling pants. When she made no move to comply, he did it for her, opening the buttons one at a time as if opening something valuable. She lay with her hands at her sides. He hooked his fingers over the waist of her pants, drew them down her legs, and pulled them inside out, getting them off over her feet. He threw them aside as he paused to take in the length of her nearly bare body. Kaelin silently bit the inside of her cheek to keep from pushing his hand away in a panic as he glided his hand up her leg, feeling the softness of her thigh. Kaelin fought back tears. She would have given anything not to be there, to be anywhere else but at the mercy of this monster. "Now the rest of it," he said in a thick whisper. "Take off those underthings." She could tell that pulling her clothes off had only excited him even more. So she did as he told her to do, trying to make it look anything but seductive as she did so. As he watched her following his orders, he sat on the edge of the bed and pulled off his boots. He dropped his pants and kicked them off. As sickened as she was terrified by the sight of him naked, Kaelin gave in to weakness and turned her eyes away from him. She wondered how she would ever be able to fall in love and let a man touch her after this. She reproached herself. She was never going to have the chance to fall in love. She was fretting over a problem she would never have. The bed moved under his weight as he climbed up beside her and lay down. He paused to stare at her, to run his hand over her belly. She'd expected it to be a rough touch, a harsh grabbing of her. But instead it was a furtive touch, a slow, measured evaluation of something quite valuable. She didn't expect his gentle approach to last much longer. "You really are quite extraordinary," he said in a husky voice, almost more to himself than to her. "Perceiving you through the eyes of others just wasn't the same. I can see that now." His tone had changed. The anger had melted away under the heat of his desire for her. He was on the brink of surrendering to uninhibited lust. "It's not at all the same. I always knew you were exceptional. But now that I see you, like this, you are a remarkable creature. Just remarkable." Kaelin wondered what he meant when he'd said that he had perceived her through the eyes of others. She wondered if he meant that he had watched her through the eyes of the sisters. She was struck by an unexpected thought that rattled her. It was the thought of him having watched her undressing when she had thought that only a sister was there. It filled her with an icy rage at such a violation. He had been there then, watching her, planning this. But at the same time, she got the feeling that he was talking about something else, too. There was more to his words, more meaning in them, something hidden. Something in the way he'd said it made her think that he was talking about something in her life before the sisters, back before she had lost who she was. She was angry thinking about him watching her through the sisters, but thinking about him seeing her before, in her life that she couldn't remember, rattled her. He abruptly rolled over onto her. "You can't imagine how long I've waited to do this to you." Her breathing and her heartbeat had only just started to settle down. Now it was happening too fast. Her heart was again thumping against her ribs. She wanted to slow him down, to give herself time to think of a way to prevent him from doing this to her. At the feel of his flesh against hers, though, her mind went blank. She couldn't think of any way to stop him. She could only fixate on how badly she didn't want him to do this. She reminded herself of the promises she had made to herself. She was better than him. She should act like it. She said nothing. She stared past him up at the roof of the tent, illuminated softly in the lamplight. You can't imagine how much I've wanted to do this to you, he said in a suddenly menacing voice. You can't imagine how much you have this coming to you. She shifted her gaze to meet his nightmare eyes. No, I can't. So just get on with it and spare me a speech that means nothing to me, since I have no idea what you're talking about. She turned her eyes away to stare off once more. She wanted to show him only indifference. She freed her mind to wander. It wasn't easy with him pressing against her, about to have his way with her, but she did her best to ignore him, to think about other things. She didn't want to give him the satisfaction of a struggle she would only lose. She thought about the Jala game, not because it was something she wished to think about, but because it was fresh enough in her mind to be easy to recall in detail. He abruptly hooked his arms behind her knees and pulled her legs up almost to her chest. It was hard to breathe. It hurt her hip joints to be bent like that, with her legs spread that way. But she swallowed back the scream and tried to ignore the way he was trying to control her, to dominate her as he took her. If he knew, this would kill him. Kaylin's eyes turned to him. She could only pull in half a breath against the weight of him. Who are you talking about? She thought that maybe it was her father, a father she didn't remember. Perhaps she had a father who was a commander in the army, and that was why she seemed to know how to fight with a knife. She couldn't imagine who else he could be talking about. She wanted to say something to deflate him, but she thought better of it, and remained silent, indifferent. Jagang's mouth was on her ear. His rough stubble scraped painfully against her cheek and neck. His breathing was fast and ragged. He was lost to the lust he was about to unleash on her. If only you knew, this would kill you, he said, obviously and profoundly pleased with the thought. Even more puzzled, she remained silent, her worry building about what he could possibly mean. She thought he was about to resume his obviously lecherous need, but he rested there, holding her legs open, staring down at her. The length of his hairy body pressed against her, on the brink of his intent. With his weight on her, she could hardly get a breath. But she knew that any protest would only be met with disinterest in what discomfort he might be causing her. In a way, she wished he would just hurry up and get it over with. The waiting was making her crazy. She wanted to scream, but she refused to allow herself to. She couldn't help dreading how much he would hurt her, how long it might last, how it would undoubtedly be repeated not just this night, but in the nights to come. Had not his bull weight been pressing her down into the bed, she would have been trembling in terrible anticipation. No, he said to himself. No, this is not what I want. Kaylin was bewildered. She wasn't sure she had heard what she thought she'd heard. He let go of her legs, letting them slip down onto the bed as he pushed himself up on his hands. She wished he wasn't lying between her legs so that she could draw them together. No, he repeated. Not like this. You don't want this, but it would only be onerous. You would not like it, but nothing more. I want you to know who you are when I do this. I want you to know what I mean to you when I do this. I want you to hate this more than you have ever hated anything in your entire life. I want to be the one to do this to you both. I want to plant the memory of what it means to you in your mind when I plant my seed in you. I want that memory to haunt you for however long you might live, to haunt him forever, every time he looks at you. I want him to learn to hate you for it, to hate what you have come to represent to him, to hate your child, the child that I will give you. To do that, you have to know who you are first. If I do this to you now, it will only dull you to it, spoil the exquisite suffering it would cause you if you knew who you were when it happens to you. So then tell me, she said, almost willing to endure rape to know. A slow, sly smile came to him. Telling you is no good. Words would be hollow, without meaning, without emotion. You have to know. You have to remember who you are. You have to know everything, if this is to truly be rape. And I intend it to be the worst rape you can suffer. A rape that will give you a child that he will see as a reminder, as a monster. Staring down at her, he slowly shook his head with the self-satisfaction of the dimension of his intent. To be that, you have to be fully aware of who you are, and everything this will mean to you, everything it will touch, everything it will harm, everything it will taint for all time. He abruptly rolled off her to the side. Kaelin drew in a breath that was almost a gasp. He gritted his teeth, and his big hand seized her right breast. Don't think you've escaped anything, darling. You'll not be going anywhere. I'm only seeing to it that it's a lot worse for you than this would have been tonight. He chuckled as he squeezed her breast. Worse for him as well. Kaelin could not imagine how anything could make it worse than it would have been. She could only imagine that to him, rape cast guilt on the victim. That was the way he thought, the way the Order thought, that the victim was to blame. He abruptly shoved her out of bed. She landed painfully on the floor, but at least her fall was broken by somewhat soft carpets. He looked down at her. You will sleep on the floor right there beside the bed. Later I will have you in my bed. He grinned. When your memory returns, when this will destroy you, then I will give you what you deserve, what only I can give you. What only I can do to ruin your life, and his. Kaelin lay on the floor, fearing to move, fearing that he might change his mind. She felt heady relief that this night she would not have to endure it. He leaned over the edge of the bed, closer to her, peering down at her with his disturbing black eyes. He shoved his big hand between her legs so unexpectedly that she cried out. He grinned at her. And if you get the idea of trying to think of a way to sneak away, or worse, to do me in while I sleep, you had better forget it right now. It won't work. All it will get you is time in the tents later on, after I've ruined everything for you. I'll see to it that all those men will have you. Right there, where my fingers are. Do you understand? Kaelin nodded, feeling a tear run down her cheek. If you move off those carpets beside the bed tonight, then the power of that collar will stop you. Do you wish to test it? Kaelin shook her head, fearing her voice might fail her. He withdrew his hand. Good. She heard him turn over on his side, facing away from her. Kaelin lay perfectly still. She could hardly breathe. She wasn't sure of what had happened this night, or what it could all mean. She only knew that she felt more lonely than she had ever felt in her life. At least, the part of her life that she could remember. In a strange way, she almost wished he had raped her. If he had, she would not now be trembling in fear of what he'd said, wondering what it meant. Now she would have to wake each morning, not knowing if that was the day she recovered her memory. When she did, it was somehow going to make that rape all the worse, make everything worse, far worse. Kaelin believed him. As eager as he had been to have her, and she knew very well how eager he had been, he would not have stopped at that point unless everything he'd said was true. Kaelin realized that she no longer wanted to know who she was. Her past had just become too dangerous for her to want to ever know who she was. If she knew, he would do the worst to her. Better that she remain in oblivion, and safe from that. When she heard his even breathing, and then his low, rumbling snore, She reached out and with trembling fingers pulled on her underthings and then the rest of her clothes. Despite it being summer, she was shaking with icy dread. She pulled a nearby carpet over her as she lay beside the bed, knowing better than to test his word about the consequences of any attempt to escape. There was no escape. This was her life. She now only hoped to keep the rest of it buried and forgotten. If she ever remembered who she was, then her life would get infinitely worse. She wouldn't let that happen. She would stay behind the dark shroud. This night she was a new person, separated from who she had been. That person had to remain forever dead. She wondered who the man could be that Jagang had talked about. She feared to imagine what Jagang was going to do to him, through her, that would so destroy him. She forced those thoughts away. That was the old her. That person was gone forever, and would remain so. In the depths of loneliness and despair, Kaelin curled up in a ball and wept silently in racking sobs. Chapter 48. Richard walked in a daze, watching the ground before him lit by moonlight. Through that dark, hazy state, only one spark of anything seemed able to burn through. Kaelin. He missed her so much. He was so tired of the struggle. He was so tired of trying. He was so tired of failing. He ached to have her back, to have his life with her back, to hold her, just to hold her. He remembered the time, years before, in the spirit house, when he had not known that she was the mother confessor, and she had been feeling desperately lonely and overwhelmed by the crushing secrets she had to keep. She had asked him to hold her, just to hold her. He remembered the pain in her voice, the pain of needing to be held, comforted. He would give anything to do that now. Stop! A voice hissed at him. Wait. Richard halted. He had trouble trying to care what was going on, even though he knew he should. He could read the tension in her posture. She was like a bird of prey cocking its head, lifting its wings the slightest bit. He couldn't seem to escape the thick lethargy that weighed him down so that he could think it through. Her deportment appeared to be the coiled potential for aggression. But underlying that, he saw a hint of fear. He finally managed to summon the concern to try to understand. Then, in the moonlight, he saw what Six was watching. It looked like a vast encampment spread across a valley. Because it was the middle of the night, it was relatively quiet down below. Even through the numb miasma of her presence, Richard felt his level of concern rising. He saw something else, too. Past the valley encampment, he saw, up on the high ground beyond, a castle that he thought he recognized. Come on, Six hissed as she glided past him. Richard trudged after her, once more sinking back into the indifferent haze where all he could think about was Kaelin. They walked for what seemed like hours through the countryside in the dead of night. Six was as quiet as a snake, moving, pausing, then moving again as she made her way along minor trails through thick woods. Richard felt comforted by the smell of balsam and fir trees. The moss and ferns delighted him with childhood memories. The delight of the woods evaporated when they walked along cobbled streets, among closed shops, past dark buildings. There were men in the shadows, pairs of them, carrying pikes. Richard felt as if he were in a dream, watching it all pass before his mind's eye. He half expected that all he would have to do was imagine the woods again and they would appear. He imagined Kaelin. She did not appear. Two men in polished metal armor rushed out of a side street. They fell to their knees before Six, kissing the hem of her black dress. She only slowed slightly for their groveling supplication. They followed along as she continued up the streets, becoming escorts for the night's shadow trailing darkness behind her. It all felt so dreamy. Richard knew that he should fight it, but he couldn't make himself care. He cared only about doing as Six told him, He couldn't help himself. Seeing the flowing form of her charmed him. Looking into her eyes captivated him. Hearing her voice bewitched him. Without his gift, she filled that empty void within his soul. Her presence somehow completed him, filled him with purpose. The two guards with them gently rapped on an iron door in a great stone wall. A small door on the inside over a small slit in the iron door opened. Eyes peered out. They widened a little at seeing the pale shadow before them. Richard could hear men on the other side rushing to draw back a heavy bar. The door opened, and six slipped through with Richard in tow. He saw great stone walls in the moonlight, but paid them little heed. He was more fascinated by the snaking shape leading him through the silky night. Once they passed through the great doors, men rushed about, opening yet more doors, shouting orders and bringing torches. "This way," one man said as he led them into a stone stairwell. Down they went, spiraling and turning ever deeper. Richard felt as if they were being swallowed down the gullet of some great stone beast. As long as Six was taking him, though, he was content to be swallowed. At lower levels, in a dank corridor, the men led her into a gloomy place. Hay was scattered over the slimy floor. Water echoed as it dripped in the distance. "Here is the place you requested," a guard told her. The heavy door squealed in rusty protest as he pulled it open. Inside, on a small table, he lit a candle with a torch. "Your room for the night," Six told Richard. "It will be light soon. I will be back then." "Yes, mistress," he said. She leaned toward him a little, a thin smile slitting her bloodless face. "If I know the Queen, she will want to begin immediately. She's quite impatient, to say nothing of being impulsive. She will no doubt bring the big men with whips. I expect that before the morning is over, she will have the flesh torn from your back." Richard stared. He couldn't make his mind grasp it all. "Mistress? The Queen is not only vicious, but vindictive. You are going to be the object of her venom. But not to worry. I still need you alive. You may suffer excruciating agony, but you will live." She turned with a billowing flourish and swept out the door, a shadow swallowed into the darkness. Men funneled out the door after her. The door banged closed. Richard heard the lock click home. Before he knew it, he was suddenly standing alone in a stone room, deserted, forsaken, forgotten. In the silence, terror began to seep into his bones. Why would a queen want to hurt him? What did Six need him alive for? Richard blinked. As the moments passed, he felt his mind working to understand. It felt as if the farther away Six went, the better he could think. After the torches were gone, it was a while before his eyes adjusted to the light of a single candle. He looked around at the stone room. There was only a chair and a table. The floor was stone, the walls were stone, the ceiling had heavy beams. It hit him like a thunderclap. Denna! This was the room where he had been taken when he had first been captured by Denna. He recognized the table. He remembered Denna sitting in that very chair. He looked up, and there, right where he remembered it being, he saw the iron peg. His wrists had been in iron manacles. Denna had hung the chain holding them together over that iron peg. He had hung from it as Denna tortured him with her agile. Horrifying images of the night Denna had broken him flashed through his mind. The night she thought she had broken him, anyway. He had partitioned his mind. But he remembered the things she had done to him that night. And he remembered what had prompted her to such violence. He had been hanging there when Princess Violet had come in to watch. The princess had decided that she wanted to participate, to join in his torture. Denna gave the little monster her agile and showed her how to use it on him. Richard remembered Violet bragging about how she was going to have Kaelin raped, tortured, and finally killed. Richard had kicked Violet hard enough to shatter her jaw and sever her tongue. This was that room. Richard leaned back against the stone wall and slid down to sit and rest. He needed to think, to figure it out, to understand what was going on. He was leaning against his pack, so he pulled it off and set it in his lap. A thought struck him, and he looked through the pack, pushing his war wizard outfit and gold cape aside until he found the book Barakas had left for him. He thumbed through the pages. They were still blank. If only he hadn't lost his gift, he would have been able to read the book. If he knew how to use his ability, he would have been able to save himself. If only. He suddenly had a thought. He couldn't let them find this book. Six had the gift, some form of it anyway. He couldn't let her see this. Barakas had hidden it for 3,000 years. It was meant for no eyes but his. He couldn't fail such a trust. He couldn't let anyone know about this book. He got up and paced around the room, searching for any place he could hide the book. There was no place. It was a simple stone room. There were no cubby holes, no niches, no loose stones. There was nowhere to hide anything. As Richard stood in the center of the room, thinking, he looked up and saw the iron peg. He moved through the room, inspecting the beams. There was one beam running parallel to one wall, without much room between the beam and the wall. The beam, like most in the ceiling, had long cracks from when the freshly cut beam had been hewn and then dried. An idea struck him. He immediately pulled the chair over and climbed up on top of it. It wasn't high enough. He pushed the chair out of the way and dragged over the table. Stepping from the chair to the top of the table, he at last was able to reach the iron peg. He wiggled it, but it was stuck tight. He needed that iron peg if he was to hide the book. He hooked his hands over the peg and used all his weight to spring up and down. At last the peg began to loosen. Working swiftly and using all his muscle, he finally managed to get the peg to wiggle. He wiggled it back and forth until he was able to pull it free. Richard dragged the table over to the side of the room near the dark corner and got up on the top. He inspected the crack in the beam, finding a place where it wandered toward the top, near the cross planks overhead. He wedged the iron peg into the split in the beam, working it in until it was stuck fast. He retrieved the pack and crammed it up in the tight space between the beam and the wall. Once he had it as high and as flat as he could get it, he shoved it along the beam until it wedged above the iron peg. He tested the pack by tugging on it, but it was stuck tightly in place. It wasn't going anywhere. He hopped down and put the table and chair back where they had been. The pack was a color similar to the aged oak of the beam, and it was in the shadows. Unless a person was looking for it, he didn't think anyone would notice the pack lodged up where he had put it. Besides, it was the best he could do. Satisfied that he had done everything he could to keep the book and the war wizard outfit from falling into the wrong hands, he lay down on the cold stone floor against the opposite wall and tried to get some sleep. He found it impossible to sleep, thinking about what Six had promised him for the next day. Fear gnawed at him, making his mind race. He knew he needed to get some rest, but he just couldn't calm himself. He did feel a sense of relief to be away from Six. He'd lost all track of time since he had been with the Wisps, and Six had been there as he left the ancient trees. He couldn't think when he was with her, couldn't do anything. She consumed his entire mind. His entire mind. He remembered being in this room before, with Denna. She had told him that he was to be her pet, and that he would be broken to her will. He remembered telling himself that he would let her do what she would, but that he would save a piece of himself, put it away, and not allow anyone into that part, not even himself, until he needed to unlock that safe place and be himself again. He had to do that again. He couldn't allow Six to have all of his mind, the way she had since she had captured him. He could still feel the weight of her influence, the pull of her will. But now that he wasn't in her immediate presence, it seemed so much less by comparison that he felt free of her and able to think, able to decide, to a degree, what he wanted. What he wanted was to be free of the witch-woman. He created a place in his mind, as he had done so long ago in this very room, and he locked a part of himself away, a part of his strength, the core of his will, in much the same way he had hidden his pack away in a hidden corner where no one would find it. With his new ability to think, and a plan, he felt a sense of relief. Even though he could still feel the witch-woman's fangs in him, he felt that she no longer had the control she thought she did. He at last was able to relax a little. He thought then of Kaelin. Her memory brought a sad smile. He made himself think of happy times with her. He thought about what it felt like to hold her, to kiss her, to be alone in the night with her, whispering to him how much he meant to her. Thinking about Kaelin, he drifted off to sleep. Chapter 49. Richard woke with a start when he heard the door being unlocked. It was a rude awakening because Kaelin had visited him in his dreams. He didn't remember his dreams, but he did know that those dreams involved her. He felt suffused with her presence, as if he had really been with her, only to be pulled away by being awake. Once he was awake, her essence immediately began draining away. The loss of even her dream presence to cold, empty consciousness was disheartening. The world seemed to have been much richer in his dreams. Even though he didn't remember them, those dreams seemed sweet, like music in the distance. Just the feel of them was enough for him to know that he would rather not be in the waking world. Richard started to sit up, only to realize how much he ached from sleeping on the stone floor. Given how foggy his head felt, he doubted that it had more than a few hours' sleep. When he saw guards spilling into the stone room, Richard staggered to his feet, trying to stretch his cramped muscles as he did so. Six swept into the room like an ill wind. Against her wiry black hair and flowing black robes, her skin looked ghost-like. Her blanched blue eyes fixed on him, as if there was nothing else in her world but him. Richard felt that look come down on him as if it were the weight of a mountain. That look, her presence, crushed his will. He swam in the feeling inundating him. As she came closer, he fought to keep his head above the dark waters of abdication of his will. It felt like fighting for his life in a raging river whose powerful current was pulling him under. "Come along, we have to get to the caves. We don't have much time." Rather than ask what she meant by not having much time, a question he doubted he would have been able to summon the strength to ask, he instead asked something else, something for which he had the strength, something still strong in his thoughts. "Do you know where Kaelin is?" Six stopped and turned halfway back to peer at him. "Of course. She is with Jagang." Jagang? Richard was stunned senseless. Six not only remembered Kaelin, but knew where she was. She seemed pleased by the pain she had so obviously just caused him. Six turned and marched for the door. "Now come on, hurry." Something was wrong. He didn't know what, but he could feel it in her power over him. She held him under her spell of seductive influence, like a balmy leash of iron strength. Yet it was not the same as before. He could feel that something was different. There was a trace of distress in her demeanor. But that was hardly what concerned him. Jagang had Kaelin. He could not imagine how Six even knew who Kaelin was, because he was so stunned by the meaning of those words. "She is with Jagang." If not for the pull of Six dragging him along in her wake, Richard would surely have collapsed to the floor. He could not conceive of a worse nightmare than Jagang having Kaelin. His thoughts tumbled in blind panic as he followed the witch-woman through the dark twists and turns of the stone passageways. He had to do something. He had to help Kaelin. Not only was she in the hands of Sisters of the Dark, but they were in collusion with Richard and Kalin's worst enemy. Thought uppermost in Richard's mind, other than his fear for Kalin, was that he knew where Jagang was. The Emperor was on his way up into Dahara, toward the People's Palace. And now Kalin was with him. So deep was he in thought that he found that they were outside before he even realized it. He understood at once what had Six so agitated. There were troops pouring into the grounds from every direction. These were the troops they had seen camped in the valley the night before. Six cursed under her breath as she looked for a way to escape the courtyard. At every entrance, soldiers flooded in. The passageway back into the castle, back to the stone room, was already closed off by a wall of men marching into the castle grounds. These were all grimy men, some wearing plate armor, some chain mail, but most wore dark leather for protection. Studded leather straps crossing their chests held leather pouches with supplies, or sheathed knives at the ready. Hung on heavy leather belts, they carried axes, maces, flails, and swords. They were as menacing as any men Richard had ever seen. The guards, in chainmail shirts covered with red tunics, were not foolish enough to make an attempt to stop such men, especially not in such numbers. Richard knew without a doubt that these men pouring onto the grounds of the castle were Imperial Order troops. "By agreement," a muscular man said as he strode up to Six. "We have come to see that Tamarang is secure for the cause of the Imperial Order."
"Yes, of course," Six said. "But this is considerably earlier than you were supposed to arrive."
The man rested a hand on the hilt of his sword as his dark eyes scrutinized the layout of the place. Richard recognized the quality of the weapons the man carried, how well made his armor was, and the way he immediately took charge. This was the commander of all these men.
"We made good time," he said. "Some of the towns and cities along the way offered no resistance, so we were able to get here now rather than after winter, as we had thought."
"Well, please accept our welcome on behalf of the Queen," Six said.
I was just going to go look for her."
The commander wore shoulder plates of formed leather, along with a pressed leather breastplate embellished with designs. Looking to have served him well, the leather plate had cuts and scrapes from fending off weapons. He had rings lining the back of his left ear, and a tattoo of scales down over the right half of his face, as if he were half man, half reptile.
"The Order operates for the good of the Order, and our cause. Tamarang is now part of the Imperial Order. I trust all here are pleased to now be people of the Order."
The sound of boots on stone covered the sound of birds singing at the impending sunrise. Men closed in all around, flowing into the courtyard walkway right up to Richard.
"Yes, of course," Six said to the commander.
She seemed to be regaining her composure.
"The Queen and I trust that you will honor the agreements made, that the castle is not to be entered by anyone from the Order, that the castle itself is to be left to Her Majesty, her advisers, and servants."
The man stared into her eyes for a moment.
"Makes no difference to me. The castle is of no use to us."
He blinked, as if somewhat surprised to hear himself agreeing to such a thing. He puffed up his chest, regaining some of his fire.
"But by our agreement, the rest of Tamarang is now a province of the Empire of the Imperial Order."
Six bowed her head in acknowledgement. Her thin smile was back.
"By agreement."
Richard noted, but hardly heard, the conversation. He had been using the loosened grip Six had on him to slip out of it. He used her distraction like an iron bar to pry her invisible claws off of him. He had managed to pry open that grip just enough to let his mind slip out. It was time he did something for himself, for Kalin. Even though he had lost the gift and had lost the Sword of Truth, he had not lost the lessons mastered from that weapon, much less the lessons learned throughout his life. He may not have had the gift, but he remembered the meaning of the symbols. He knew the rhythm of the dance with death. He was still one with a blade. Now, he needed only to get his hands on a blade. While Six and the officer decided the limits of where the men would go on the grounds, where they would stay out of, and what was theirs within the city itself,
Richard glanced behind, noticing the wooden handles on the swords of the soldiers, and the leather handle on the sword of the subordinate officer right behind, just a little to Richard's right. He smiled at the man as he pulled a copper penny from his pocket and casually rolled it across his knuckles. He let the penny slip and fall, as if he were clumsy. He squatted down to pick it up, pressing one hand to the sandy dirt beside the path for balance as he reached out for the coin, letting grit stick to his palms and fingers. He scooped up the penny, getting as well a small amount of sandy dirt. The officer behind, watching his superior speaking to Six, only glanced Richard's way as Richard wiped the dirt off the penny and then returned it to a pocket. Six presented a much more captivating subject than an awkward nobody. Richard acted like he was idly brushing his hands, but he was really covering his palms and fingers with the grit. Once he began, he didn't want his hands slipping on leather. Without turning, he leaned back toward the lesser officer standing behind him. The man was intent on the bewitching figure of Six as she spun her web, telling the men what she would like them to do. Out of his peripheral vision, Richard could see the hilt of the weapon hanging at the man's hip. It was better made than the weapons carried by most of the men. As Six and the commander were talking, Richard turned a little, feigning a stretch. In an instant, his hand was on the sword. In another instant, the blade was free. Having a weapon, a sword, in his hand, instantly flooded Richard with memories, forms, and skills he had spent long hours learning. The lessons may have, in part, come from otherworldly sources, but the knowledge was not magic. It was the experience of countless seekers before Richard. Even though he didn't have that weapon with him, he still had that knowledge. The officer, apparently half-thinking Richard was just being foolish, made a move to recover his weapon. Richard spun the sword and with a backward thrust ran him through. Other men sprang into action. Swords came free in the cool dawn air. Big men freed huge crescent battle axes from their belts, along with maces and flails. Richard was suddenly in his element. The haze was gone from his mind. He had not expected the part of his mind that he had locked away for safekeeping to be called upon this soon. But the time had come, and he had to act. This was his chance. He knew where Kaelin was, and he had to get to her. These men were in his way. Richard swung, taking off an arm, wielding an axe. The cry, the spray of blood, made the men nearby flinch. In that sliver of an instant, Richard made his move. He brought his sword up through another man, lifting his sword. The man died before he even had his arm fully cocked back. Richard spun out of the way of weapons coming for him. Despite the sudden cacophony of metal clanging, of men yelling, Richard was already in a silent world of purpose. He was in control. These men may have thought that they had an army against him, but in a way that was his advantage. He didn't fight an army. He fought individuals. They thought like a collective mass, a collective element, allowing one another to move as if the soldiers were trying to be one big fighting centipede. That was a mistake. Richard used it to cut into them. While they hesitated, waiting for others to act, waiting for an opening, Richard was already moving through their lines, cutting them down. He let them swing and lunge, using strength and effort, while he floated through the onslaught of steel. Every time he thrust, he made contact. Every time he swung his weapon, he cut. It was like going through a thick brush, slashing aside the branches that reached out at him. He let the momentum of the sword power the next strike, keeping it in continuous motion rather than using effort and precious time to draw it back. If he brought the blade down, slicing through the side of a man's neck, he continued the movement, bringing the weapon up behind to run a man through as he rushed in, and then, as he pulled the blade out, he spun away as swords, axes, and flails came down where he had been only a moment before. It was a fluid dance, moving through the grunting, diving, jumping men. Slice, 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 letting the screams fill the morning air, letting the alarm of not being able to stop him cause others to hesitate in fear of what could be happening. At all times, Richard kept his objective in sight. He was heading for the opening out of the wall. Even though he charged, wove, and feigned his way through the onslaught of men, he headed relentlessly for that opening and his freedom. He had to get through, and then he could get to Kalin.
This is the end of disc number 17. Please continue listening on disc number 18.